The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 379, recorded on February 28th, 2015.
Hello, and welcome to the 379th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 212th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and occasionally includes other segments.
No, not this week.
But not this week. Otherwise, I would have said what those segments were.
Now, I was going to put Tron 2.0. Because as part of my What Have You Been Playing, I recently rebought Tron on Steam, Tron 2.0, for $5. But I decided it'd be another time for that. I've played and beat the game many, many times, so I'm just doing it to enjoy the story.
Oh. Well, then why not just watch the YouTube videos of it?
God, no, because there's no interaction.
Yeah.
You know, I could watch YouTube videos of Grim Fandango, too, but they're not playing the game I want to play.
No, good point.
So, and the thing is that Tron 2.0 has a bit of a, I forgot what it's called. Oh, collect quest. But really, you're
right.
Just
fetch quest.
Finding things to upgrade your character. But there's a crap ton of emails that don't do anything except give you backstory. And it's really fun to read those emails and see some of what's going on. You know, what happened after the movie Tron. How Jet and Alan's relationship is, that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's really a good carrot, and it gives you nothing except story info, and you find that you start really valuing that story info.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. This is before we had achievements.
Yeah, I can't play anything on Steam or the other one.
Good old games. Well, good old games. You have a grudge against. So.
Yeah. Well, they were jerks to me. But yeah, I can't. Apparently, some people have decided that they're not going to support XP anymore, and they're just fools.
They're not going to what?
That they're not going to support XP anymore. So they're just fools.
Well, Paul, you know, you could always sit there with your typewriter and your cassette recorder. And your rabbit ears, black and white television, or you can join the 21st century.
I will pry my XP out of my cold, dead hands.
Uh-huh.
What? It's the last operating system worth a damn.
You haven't done 7.
Yes, I have.
No, you haven't.
See, you're saying this as if I haven't tried them all.
Wait a minute. What's wrong with 7?
It's counterintuitive.
What?
They changed things for no reason other than to have made changes. They didn't change anything to make improvements. They just changed things to be like, ooh, look, we're 7. We're different and new.
Okay.
And it doesn't work as well. Sorry.
I haven't noticed that, so.
Navigating your way through Windows 7 feels like walking in a house of cards.
Okay.
It doesn't feel at all reliable or secure. It feels like the whole thing's about to crash.
Really?
Yeah.
Like I said, that's not my experience with it. But then again, you know, you want whale oil lamps and Garrett's.
No, I just want a solid, reliable operating system.
7 is reliable.
No, it's not.
Okay, anyways, we're going to move on to game news. And again, the news is kind of light, but what is there is profoundly annoying. And if Jordan was with this podcast, he'd have steam coming out of his ears for the first two news items that we have here. So while we're at it, go ahead with the first one, Paul.
Livono pre-installed Superfish adware on its laptop, and this comes to us from Slate. Since last September, Livono has been shipping OEM Windows laptops preloaded with Superfish adware. Which would rudely inject its own shopping results into your browser when you searched on Google, Amazon, or other websites. By installing a single self-signed root certificate, trust me, this is really bad, across all of Livono's affected machines, Superfish intentionally pokes a gigantic hole in your browser security and allows anyone on your Wi-Fi network to hijack your browser silently and collect your bank credentials, passwords, and anything else you might conceivably type on there. On January 21st, a user posted a detailed description of Superfish and its problems to a Livono forum and incredulously request a refund. His post went unanswered for a month.
You know, that sounds like you and good old games there.
Don't even. Livono claimed Superfish had been disabled and posed no threat, even though merely uninstalling Superfish doesn't remove the root certificate. Superfish, a Palo Alto-based California company that also makes visual search apps, was founded by surveillance veteran Addy Finnis, who has a long history of disseminating adware, spyware, malware, and crapware. Really? Crapware? That's a thing? With ties to a whole host of privacy-violating companies, including the Verizon wiretapping scandal. As Errata's Securities, Robert Graham put it, "I can intercept the encrypted communications of Superfish's victims, people with Livono laptops, while hanging out near them at a cafe Wi-Fi hotspot." Security researcher Mark Rogers wrote that it, quote, "It's quite possibly the single worst thing I have seen a manufacturer do to its customer base. I cannot believe how evil this is."
Well, I mean, you also have Sony doing the rootkits on its CDs, but yeah. So I'm not as familiar with. I know superficially what the registries are, but do you understand what they mean by a single self-signed root certificate?
Basically, how I read this is that there's a little doodad on your computer that you can't uninstall and get rid of, that unless you know the specific, like, counterintuitive file name to go looking for and delete manually, there's going to be a security hole on your computer, and that the maker of your computer knowingly put it there on purpose.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, another security person said that the only thing you can really do to solve this is to format your entire hard drive and install a regular version of Windows, which sort of defeats the purpose of buying a laptop, because you're supposed to have all that stuff pre-installed. That's the big thing, you know. These laptops come pre-installed, so you don't have to worry about that stuff, and you don't have to buy an additional copy of Windows.
They're supposed to be able to give you the disks, which, you know, is what happened with my HP, but even if you then wipe it, you know, is this same Starfish on the disk?
That's my point, though. You know, you don't know. Maybe it's still there, and you end up having to buy another version of Windows. So, yeah, I mean, there is a certain amount of trust that you have when you're buying your laptop from somebody. And Microsoft can't be pleased, because, you know, the thing is that laptops are, you know, they're more or less going on their way out and are being replaced by tablets.
Oh, no, I can't agree with you there. I mean, possibly for the majority of users, but I know that one of the problems that I have had in trying to find and price a suitable computer for what it is that I need to do, the bigger high-end machines are the things that are going to run Unity or SolidWorks. The tablets just can't do it. At least not yet.
Okay. Well, you know what I mean, though. I mean, from a popular standpoint.
Right. For a casual user, yes.
I mean, you know.
I could see that. I mean, I kind of do want, like, one of those all-in-one tablet deals for, you know, when all I need to do is write and travel. Because my computer's 15 pounds and it's a laptop.
Well, see, I bought a laptop that's a small 15-incher, and I used to have a 17-inch, you know, laptop, you know, those big widescreen screens.
Right. That's what I got.
But I got a smaller one, which is a touchscreen, just because I didn't want to have to lug around something huge all the time. And the thing is that I seldom ever use it anymore. You know, I still use just the iPad for the stuff that I've been using it for. Maybe I should have gotten something but it did have a robust graphics card. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that I seldom use it, even when I'm going out, you know, to cover a convention. But that's besides the point. That's neither here nor there. This... Like I said, this is basically a core breach of consumer trust.
I would completely agree. Yeah. I mean, there is no reason for them. There's no justifiable words that they can say to me for me to not be furious at them.
Yeah. Do you remember the Window Shopper malware? Do you remember that? All of a sudden, you open up your browser when you search for something, all of a sudden this thing would pop up, you know, showing prices for the stuff that you searched for, you know, that annoying thing. That happened to me once, and it apparently this guy was responsible for that as well. So, you know, at least you could get rid of it, but it was still extremely annoying. Like, you know, for those of you out there, you know, Malwarebytes, download that software because it'll save you a lot of pain. As a matter of fact, today when I was doing running a scan, it found something and quarantined something for me. So, you know, wear protection.
Yep. Don't go out in the rain without your raincoat.
We're going to move on to the next item. The FCC approves strong net neutrality rules. And this comes to us from the Washington Post.
Woohoo!
The FCC, for the first time, classified internet providers as public utilities on Thursday, a landmark vote that officials said will prevent cable and telecommunication companies from controlling what people see on the web. The move, approved 3-2 along party lines, was part of the sweeping set of the quote-unquote new net neutrality rules aimed at banning providers of high-speed internet access such as Verizon and Time Warner Cable from blocking websites they don't like or auctioning off faster traffic speeds to the highest bidders. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler argued that the agency needed to take a dramatic step to preserve a, quote-unquote, fast, fair, and open internet. Broadband internet providers will now face some of the same heavy regulations that federal government imposes on telephone companies. Quote, the internet has replaced the functions of the telephone, Wheeler said during the commission vote. The internet is simply too important to allow broadband providers to be the ones making the rules. Cable and telecommunications companies, as well as GOP lawmakers, quickly condemned the move as an overreach of government intervention into their businesses, and lawsuits are expected to follow. Big surprise there.
Yeah, right.
The rules ban internet providers from several specific activities. They can't block or stop web services such as Netflix.
Which is hugely important.
They can't,
and probably the most important part of this, but please continue.
Yeah. They can't slow or quote-unquote throttle content from particular websites. And they can't speed up websites' traffic, particularly in exchange for money. The rules
right.
also apply to wireless carriers such as Verizon Wireless, Sprint, and T-Mobile, which provide internet service to tens of millions of smartphones and tablets. So, yeah, you're desperately wanting to break in there, so go ahead.
I mean, I have so many things to say about this, but let's just start off with an example of how does this affect our average listener. So if you have Netflix or Hulu or one of these services, you're basically getting unlimited content for about $8-9 a month, like I am, right? Completely reasonable, especially according to the Novak valuation formula, but that, you know, we're going to move on. So basically, what companies like Time Warner realize is that, hey, they're losing people from their
cable
providers. So that they're, you know, people are just like, oh, I'll just catch it on Netflix. You know, why do I need to get HBO or Showtime? You know, I'll just wait an extra month and, you know, I can get it for super cheap on Netflix. They want Netflix to pay them more money for you to be able to stream their service from Netflix. And now what that's going to do is that's going to increase Netflix's overhead, and they're going to turn around and pass that price directly onto their consumer. So your $8, $9 a month unlimited viewing on Netflix is going to jump to like $30. And at that point, who the hell is going to pay for it at triple the price? This is why we have inflation. Reasons like this. People getting more, you know, people wanting more money from you.
The thing that they don't, that Time Warner doesn't understand is that people don't want to watch their crap anyway. So they'll just say, screw
it.
And it's not even
that like Time Warner is producing the crap. You know, they're just a conduit to get you the entertainment from the big studios. It's only one channel. They just want to be the most important channel.
Because DVD rentals still exist, so.
Exactly. You know, there's still Redbox. I mean, there might not be a Blockbuster because who needs all of those?
Well, you still have Netflix, too. I mean, Netflix still,
Netflix still runs a DVD service.
Yeah, so.
So that's just one specific way how this affects the majority of people out there. Another fantastic example is what if you, I don't know, need to do research on any subject? What if you are interested in purchasing, you know, custom goods from a local craftsperson? Or heck, even, you know, that tiny little goat farm that you happen to, you know, get some cheese from on your bed and breakfast trip across the country. And now that you're back home, you want to continue to do business with them.
There's something else as well. Suppose you want to have entertainment that's of a more lurid sort. You don't
not
want
even lurid.
Tell,
not even, not
you don't
even
want people
lurid.
Telling
just,
you, you can't watch that, so we're going to throttle that, so you can't watch your precious porn. You
know? Not even porn, just anything subversive or opinionated. Not even subversive, opinionated to either end of the spectrum.
Yeah, but
if Time Warner is a particularly conservative company, they can throttle all of the liberal sites. Or if Dish Network is providing your internet, then they could, and they're particularly liberal, they could, you know, throttle all of your conservative content. It's basically, the FCC has said that is not within their purview to be able to make those decisions.
One of the things they also said in response to some of what the GOP were saying was that this, you know, we're not regulating this any more than freedom of speech is regulating your ability to talk. You know, I mean, this is, and the thing is that, you know what, at some point, the internet will be a public utility. You know, declaring it one now really doesn't change the future, because at some point, people are going to realize that the internet is going to even more of a core experience for homes than it is now. I mean, right now it's more like radio in the 1900s, right, in which it's just, ooh, it's new and a fad. But you know, our lives are being wrapped up, you know, by the internet. You know,
not for nothing, from a socio-political standpoint, they want to make the government really does want to make the internet as cheap and widely available as possible, because quite frankly, its availability to cheap and constant entertainment or giant time sucks like Facebook, which is keeping our society from having a freaking pitchfork revolution.
Yeah. The other...
I'm only saying this because we've seen this happen in other countries like Russia. I mean, wow. The Gestapo, you know, the secret police would come into people's homes and murder their family members, and they would say nothing.
Well, they're doing that now, so...
They rioted in the streets when you couldn't pirate entertainment.
Well, they're doing that now, so I don't know if that's been... Because, you know, if you know about the news, that the major political opponent of Vladimir Putin was shot, you know, in broad daylight in front of a female companion. I don't know if she was related to him or if she's just a date or whatever, but you have that now. The other thing is that this also allows smaller internet services to survive, because the money, you know, if the larger companies are charging people to be able to use their service, you know, they're forced to deal with them because they have the most population, which prices the smaller internet companies right out, you know, and it'll just suffocate them because websites are being forced to pay for the large service, which would be Comcast/Time Warner. So this also helps small internet companies as well. As much as it sounds like it may not, but it actually does, because everybody's on equal footing there.
All right. Well, I mean, I know absolutely nothing about smaller internet providers, so I'm not. I don't feel qualified to speak to that. But
from pure logic, you can understand how that would work.
I can definitely understand how that would work. I mean, kind
now,
of.
Jordan
like,
was here because Jordan has a small internet company that's in Washington. I forgot the name of it. That's a startup that's really annoying the larger internet companies there. So, you know, and if you have someone who says.
I didn't know that.
If you have someone who says, you know what, we're not going to be like T-Mobile or Verizon. All our data is completely and utterly 100% free with a single tier of payment, you know, and they're forcing you to, you know, you only get 2 terabytes amount it is per month, and then we throttle your service. This is what they do now. You know, if you have a small company, say, hey, you know what, we have 4G the entire time. Don't worry about it. We have just one flat fee. And,
and in case anyone, you know, following this conversation didn't realize this, throttling is bad. I mean, it's not like a car. You know, throttling in this instance is bad.
Yeah, Time Warner has been accused of throttling. And I had to call him out on it because I realized that my internet service was kind of slow. And they said, oh, no, wait, that shouldn't be. What's it called? Blah, 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 blah. Talk, talk, talk. All of a sudden, my speed is back up again. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. You didn't know? Bull. You're just trying to see if you can get away with it. You know?
And you know what? Most people don't know how to pay close enough attention to catch them and call them on it.
I mean, but it was easy because I'm pretty sure anybody else using Netflix would have noticed that there was something wrong. and they would have called, but they wouldn't have realized it was throttling. They would have just thought, oh, you know, something's wrong with the wire in my house or something like
that. Oh, yeah. It's the gremlins. I will be the first person to admit that when I don't understand something, I blame the gremlins.
Now, moving on beyond this news, you're not going to really notice anything for six months because of certain things. You know, it's physical stuff. But it'll be interesting what happens after 6 months when this is officially implemented. And I wonder if we'll suddenly start seeing faster internet speeds because, oh, good luck. So they're forced to actually...
Throttling's not allowed.
Well, not only throttling, but, you know, it's like they can't get away with it. You know, they can't get away with... Anyways.
Yeah, quite frankly, I am curious to see how many people in our country right now are being throttled and have no idea, because I'll bet you I'm one of them.
But the thing is, you know...
I'm not ashamed to admit it.
It's stupid because, you know, it's sort of killing the golden goose, you know?
Oh, yeah. Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah. Anyways, so yay, net neutrality for the win. And
woohoo.
But here's the thing is that there's another thing, too. The internet is very politically active when it comes to their internets. If somehow net neutrality was taken down, I think you would have had an uprising.
Oh, right. That's exactly what
you would have ever seen. You know, who cares about race relations or human rights? No, it's our internet being affected here. Now it's personal.
Oh, yeah. We need to see more of Kim Kardashian's ass. I mean, how dare you take away that right?
You know, I mean, this is personal. This is going too far. You know, I mean, this is where people of all races and creeds and classes, what's it called, would start getting really annoyed. And right in the front start are going to be the MMO players who are like, wait, you can't do this.
Oh, our poor MMO brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And of course, people watching Netflix.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't screw with my Netflix. I'll sign a petition.
Anyways, we're going to move on to some more happy news. Go ahead, Paul.
Capcom takes co-op out of Resident Evil. Modders put it back in. And this comes to us from Kotaku. When Capcom put Revelations 2 on Steam, the product page promised the game would have local co-op for the game's campaign mode. The reason it could support co-op is because the game is structured around two characters running around with one another. It wasn't until just before launch that Capcom revealed that local co-op would be exclusive to the console versions and was removed from PC. The company offered refunds to customers who felt burned by the mistake, but there still wasn't local co-op for PC owners, and it didn't seem like Capcom was going to patch it in down the line. Well-known Resident Evil modder Fluffy Quack debuted an early look of his co-op mod on Friday, only 4 days later. Though it isn't done yet, players can mess around with local co-op by downloading Fluffy Manager. The usual caveats come with downloading such software. It's probably buggy and so on.
Yeah. So, I mean, Capcom did the right thing. They said, you know, look, if you really wanted co-op, you know, here it is. You know, you can have your money back, right?
Absolutely. Which is, I mean, completely the right way to have handled this situation.
But on the other hand,
whether it was a mistake or they heck just changed their mind because they didn't feel like it.
The thing is that it's in the console versions. And I'm wondering why local co-op might be, you know, not used. I mean, it's not like you have to use Capcom server space in order to do co-op.
Oh, I know the answer to this.
Okay, go ahead.
Gremlins.
But, you know, they took it out for whatever reason. Maybe they had a signed deal with Sony and Microsoft. Who knows?
Right.
But, you know, PCs have the PC master race has something called modders. And if you know this, there are a lot of artifacts and a lot of software for stuff. Features that were going to be in a game, but were dummied out because they didn't even have time, or was taking up too much system resources, or whatever, you know. But the skeletons are still there. And a modder said, you know what, I'm going to pick up the pieces and just, you know, do what they weren't going to do. And, you know, it's nice for...
And if you have the time and the ability and the inclination, God bless.
Especially if you have a name like Fluffy Quack.
I mean, hey, points of originality, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, look, he deserves special praise for coming up with the username Fluffy Quack. And also the Fluffy Manager.
Oh, yes, yeah, so this is about to sidetrack me into our DuckTales news, so.
Well, you know, I mean, God knows a lot of us need a fluffer.
On that note.
So, do you want to do this after the last news item, or do you want to say it now? Talk about it now?
Oh, yeah, they're remaking DuckTales. It's going to be out in 2017. I'm super excited.
Wait, the game or the show?
the show.
Okay. Well, you know, Alan Young passed
away. Which, by the way, I really do want to point out that the chain of events here has been that, you know, there was a, you know, cartoon in the late 80s, which spawned, you know, an entire television animation division for Disney.
Oh, my God.
Shows like The Gummy Bears and Rescue Rangers and Tailspin, like, were all funded because of the success of Doc.
I'm going to tell you something. I was in my late teens and college age when you had those shows coming out, you know, the Disney, the
like
Disney
five.
Power Hour, right?
Was no, the Disney, Disney Power, Afternoon. No, it was, no, Disney, it was afternoon. Disney Afternoon.
But I still watched and enjoyed those shows. As
oh, yeah. I mean, they were, you know what? I've been watching, they released them on DVD a few years ago. I've been watching them like the last month or so. There's some quality writing going on in there, but that's besides the point.
Yeah.
So,
you know, by the way, I was wrong. Alan Young is still alive. He's 95. For those who don't know, Alan Young is the voice of Scrooge McDuck.
Oh, yeah, right. But I knew that, and I'll tell you why when we get to the video game portion of this story. So there was a successful TV show which led to a successful video game on the original NES. That game was remade, was it last year or 2 years? I mean, it was a fantastic, this was a really well put together game.
And by the way, that game also used, the thing is the original game did not, it had dialogue, but it didn't have any, you know, voice because it was.
Well, right. I mean, it was the 8-bit era. I mean, there was no such thing as voice acting on home
consoles.
Every
single actor from the show, except for the guy who did the voice of Guy,
right, which is why I knew Scrooge was alive. So
alive, but everybody else did the voices. So that game actually supplied voices where there were none before. So you actually,
oh right, because once you do a voice for Disney, like they will make sure that they come back to you if they need to use that voice again somewhere else. So that this way, there's consistency among their characters in all of their products, which is, I mean, good for them.
I mean, Alan Young did it, and he was 93 at the time.
Right. So the fact of the matter is that I really do think that, you know, this was a tight game. It had a loyal fan base. It was, you know, it was redone 2 or 3 years ago, maybe even last year.
Enjoy the Mickey Mouse's castle
thing? I'm not done.
Okay.
But the sales from this tiny little game were so profitable that I really do think that it is a lesson here that if we support the quality products that we want, we will get more of those IPs, which is why this show is being brought back.
I think DuckTales would have been brought back either way, really.
Well, no, I mean, because there were a couple of other DuckTales products, specifically on mobile, that were god-awful. I mean, they were horrendous. One of them was essentially like Halo, but with ducks and water balloons. I mean, it was on the iPhone. It was god-awful.
Let me ask you a question.
I was so excited about it, and it just tanked.
Did you like the remake of the Mickey Mouse's, I think it was, what, the Castle game?
Oh, yeah, I played that. Castle of Illusion. It was awesome. I mean, I missed it the first time around, but the original came downloaded on, you know, came with the bundle pack on, what was it, the PS3? Oh, I got it sitting over there?
Yeah.
Yeah, on the PS3. So, I absolutely played it, and I think that remastering a tight, well-designed classic game is a strategy that I think is really starting to pay off for companies like Disney.
Okay, I will say this.
Who seem to have a little problem in the design department, if I could point that out.
The most watchable shows from that Disney afternoon for me were, number one, Tailspin.
Oh my God, Tailspin is a really good show.
And two, Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
Oh my God, Rescue Rangers is not that great of a show.
I loved it. I mean, what's it called?
You know, I was just watching it this morning. Like, no joke.
Come on. I didn't even know, that's where I learned the expression to write from.
Yes, but one, you sound like an idiot when you say that. Two, the writing's just not as tight.
I don't know. And I did not know this until recently that they were actually based off Tom Selleck and Indiana Jones.
I definitely think Tailspin was a brilliant show. My personal favorite from that era, by the way, was always The Gummy Bears.
Yeah, I like that show. Even though they had all the stock character voices for that show, all of them were the stock voices. But I see.
That sounds a little insulting.
No, I mean they were the stock voices. What's it called? Most used Disney voices were in that show.
Right. I mean, that's just
music
means,
and.
Well, no, no. I mean, that just means that they found a quality employee who was good to work with and reliable and had talent. So they continued to put work their way.
Here's a question for you. I know it's supposed to be based, and I know, because I learned this, I know it's supposed to be based on the gummy bears, you know, the candy. But aside from, yes, but aside from the gummy berry juice, there was almost no connection between them and the candies.
There was not supposed to be a connection between them and the candies.
I don't know. I mean, that's what I heard. It was supposed to be a tie-in. But, you know...
But that doesn't make any sense because Disney has no marketing for that candy. Like, that candy has been around forever.
Let me ask you a question, then. Who is your favorite character from Tailspin?
Oh, dear God. There's so many. Actually, you know what? I really do think that Rebecca Cunningham was a character out of her time.
Well, she was based on Rebecca Howe from Cheers. That was actually what the creator said. And you could see Rebecca Howe's character in her.
Although, right. Oh, I know. I could definitely believe that.
Struthers.
But if we're going to look at children's entertainment and cartoons specifically, I mean, there are a handful of successful businesswomen characters like Rebecca, like Jerrica Benton, who were early role models for girls in the 80s.
I really like Don Carnage. He was the goofiest.
I did not care for Don Carnage.
He was the goofiest. And, you know...
I like Shere Khan.
Shere Khan, well, I like the way they portrayed him as well. As sort of like the evil businessman, but a strong moral code. You know?
I don't think he had a strong moral code. I think that was the entire point of his character.
He did have a strong moral code. If he gave you a promise, he kept it.
No, he didn't.
He did. He just
no,
tried
he
to
didn't.
Find inventive
no,
ways
no,
around
no.
it.
No. He kept it to the letter to which it served him to keep it.
Well, that, you know, exact words, you know, but that's why you have to word it correctly. And also, he had his standards as well. I mean, he did have standards.
Nope. He's an evil one percenter, and we should all look at that. We should all look at that, because that's what's being done to our people.
I guess.
I'm just saying.
But, you know, the thing is that the thing with Rebecca was that she was just like her Cheers character. At one point, she could be no nonsense, and another point, she could be absolutely batshit crazy and goofy.
Right, and at other points, she was strong, and on some other occasions, she was vulnerable. I mean, she was a well-rounded and well-used character.
Oh, but here's the other thing, though, that was rare.
Much more than like another female character later in the Disney afternoon years.
I'm going to tell you something.
Princess Jasmine. Who was just always hard-ass princess, and that was it.
Yeah. I'm going to say something else about Rebecca, which was extremely rare. She was a single mother.
And oh, absolutely. Oh, I mean, I love that.
Disney, because in Disney, it's usually the mothers who are gone, and the...
Oh, my God, that's so 90s.
You know, but she was a single mother, and, you know, which was rare for a lot of cartoons, especially rare for Disney, because mothers in Disney are there to be killed, and so that the fathers could find a new hot chick to date. That was... That was Disney. I'm sorry, but...
I think you might be making a sweeping generalization.
Basically, but, you know, like I said, single mother, I mean, you don't see that in a cartoon.
I will agree with you as far as you don't see single mothers much in cartoons. And that was, I mean...
Was not...
One of my favorite episodes is either number 12 or number 17. It's called Her Chance to Dream. Go look it up on YouTube. It's fantastic. And it really shows...
And is it me?
The dimensions of a single mother character in animation.
But here's the thing, her husband or her male paramour, whoever she had Molly with, I don't think he died. I think they just separated. And
Exactly. I think she might have just been a divorcee. Like she wasn't tragic. She wasn't constantly weeping over her dead husband. She was, you know,
and so
that was
constantly,
you know,
having to deal with lackadaisical employees.
Right, and you know what? Finding a new man was not her motivation. Like, good for her. She was going to go out and support herself and her daughter with her own money-making ideas. Good for her.
And she was a lioness.
No, she was a bearess.
She was a bearess.
No, she's a bear.
Oh. You know, I have to see that show again, because I could have sworn she was a lioness.
Well, I'm telling you.
Okay, I'm saying that.
Number 17, Her Chance to Dream.
Well, that makes, the thing is that, you know, that makes her lack of a romantic relationship with Blue even more, because they're both bears, you know, so.
Well, right, but just because, I mean, just because two guys are both gay doesn't mean they're going to get it on, you know what I mean?
I don't know.
Let's just point that out there to all of our LGBT listeners. Like, just because you happen to know two lesbians doesn't mean you should set them up on a date with each other.
I'm pretty sure you noticed that Don Carnage had a little bit of LGBT into him, right? He wasn't exactly the straightest guy in the world.
They're cartoons, dude. You're seeing things there that you want to see.
No. They do have codes, especially in cartoons. We've seen it before.
No, I think you're seeing things that you just want to see.
No.
Yeah.
Anyways,
well, so now that we've done the the history of late 80s Disney animation.
I had to fill out this time because, you know, there's not much news this week.
It's a slow week. It's a slow news week. Can we name the episode something about the Disney afternoon, please? Because, I mean, that's going to be the most entertaining part of this.
Everywhere. They are the-
oh, my God. There's such a good, there's such good shows in there.
Also, really, really, you know, those themes you cannot get out of your head. You know, forget about Duck.
Oh, my God. They were very well written.
You know, I mean, the gummy bears, that was a gummy bears
hopping everywhere. Oh, yeah. Tailspin. Oh, yeah.
That didn't burrow into your brain like as much as.
And what was that? What was that? Who was that artist? Like 9 months or a year ago, who did an impassioned, soulful rendition of the Gummy Bears theme on late night television?
I have no idea.
Was it Alicia Keys?
I had no idea.
I don't know. Oh my God, it's amazing. We should find the link and put it in the notes. Oh my God, but it was like, she was just like, I'm going to sing a little song for you. She just gets on the piano and does like a self-accompanied, soulful version of the peppy Gummy Bears theme song. And nobody had any idea what she was about to sing. I mean, we're putting it in context, so when you see it, it's not going to be as powerful because we told her what it was.
You're probably
going to
have no soul for this, but I really didn't care about Darkwing Duck.
Oh, Darkwing Duck was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I didn't really care. Although I have
a good friend who loved Darkwing Duck.
Who's only cared about self-promotion.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little... But it was Disney superheroing.
I did like... Who was the... Jeez, I forgot his name. You know, the duck version of RoboCop. And I'm trying to remember.
Gizmo Duck.
I did enjoy that, though.
Yeah, he was fun.
Yeah.
And you could see, like, the general thoughts of television animation of, like, oh, okay, well, it's the third season. We better bring on some new characters.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I was mostly watching Animaniacs, which was Fox, right? But when an Animaniacs...
No, it was Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Well, in New York, it aired on Fox. Okay.
And it aired on WPIX, Channel 11.
Are you sure? Fox? Okay. I know one of them aired on Fox, and the other one aired on PIX, right? So.
Oh, maybe I'm getting them backwards. No, you're right. Disney Afternoon was on Channel 11. Animaniacs was on Channel 5.
So the thing is that when it was a rerun, I would just flip over to the Disney Afternoon.
Right. You know? Absolutely.
So the one thing that they did, the Disney Afternoon did have a bit of a Saturday morning presence as well. I only know that because if I flipped, sometimes there would be a Disney show on.
Those were syndicated TV shows. A lot of different markets slugged them in whenever they needed to.
I'll tell you,
because they were paying a Netflix type arrangement with the studios.
When you're in a,
you know, we'll play them whenever we need to.
College dorm, there isn't much to watch. So a lot of people who were living in dorms in college were watching these shows as well.
Yeah, but you were supposed to be doing your homework, Jonah.
That's just it. You do your homework at night. I mean. College had less homework than you did in elementary school and grade school. Come on.
Oh, right, because you guys were all hungover in college, so you had to watch Saturday morning cartoons.
It wasn't a tuition. It was a cover charge.
I don't even know. Oh, yes. It wasn't a tuition. It was a cover charge. I get it.
Yeah, so I...
For all the partying you did, I get it.
That's also the only time I ever watched David Letterman was while I was in college. After I left college, there was no reason for me to watch David Letterman anymore.
Wow, we have gone fantastically off. I tried to keep it in with the DuckTales video game, but...
Yep.
Oh, no, but they all had their own video games. They had a Rescue Rangers video game, they had a Tailspin video game, which was nothing like the TV show. That was like some real examples of brand slapping. They had two different Aladdin games.
Pretty good. I never played it, but I heard a lot of good things about it.
What?
The Chip and Dale game, I heard, was pretty good.
I remember that. I remember that being pretty good.
Yeah.
There were two different Aladdin games. There was one for the Sega and there was one for the Super Nintendo. The Super Nintendo was basically a different version of Mario and I think they were created for two different companies. But the Sega one was done by Virgin America, which no longer makes games, sadly, because that was because that Aladdin game was awesome.
So for all of you out there who enjoyed the Saturday Disney Afternoon or enjoyed the Fox Animation Hour, let us know.
Oh, yeah. I can see our question of the week going that way.
No, it's actually something different. Well, it was something there. Maybe I'll change.
Well, I hope you don't expect me to do half an hour riff on on whatever topic that is, because I think you might have just riffed me out for the
day. We're moving on to the next item. No One Lives Forever re-release isn't happening after all. And this comes from Gamer. Night Dive Studios filed for a trademark on No One Lives Forever last year, which was a cause for celebration, not only because it was such a great game, but also because Night Dive seemed to be the ideal outfit to bring it to modern platforms. They're the guys who were finally able to resurrect System Shock 2. However, studio founder Stephen Kick has told to Kotaku that months after trying to nail down the rights to the game and make something happen, it's all come to naught. The first and foremost challenge facing Night Dive was figuring out who actually owned the rights to this game. It was developed by Monolith and produced by Fox, but in the decade and a half since it came out, Monolith was acquired by Warner Brothers, while Fox Interactive was purchased by Vivendi, which then entered a merger with Activision. Don't you just love the video game industry? Warner appeared to be the primary rights holder, but told Night Dive that Activision has some ownership as well, and then as a result of that merger. Activision, however, said it couldn't confirm its standing because the records predated digital storage and wasn't entirely sure where the paperwork was. 20th Century Fox, which Night Dive also contacted, was in the same boat. There wasn't much enthusiasm for the idea of re-releasing No One Lives Forever from anyone, according to the report, but when the wheels didn't come off entirely until December of 2014, when Night Dive received a letter from an attorney representing Warner that threatened legal action if it went ahead with a new version of the game. That led to further back and forth regarding licensing, but in February, the final word came down that Warner wasn't interested in either publishing an updated No One Lives Forever itself or partnering with Night Dive to make it happen. Because of that, Night Dive said that it will now let its trademark on the title lapse. No One Lives Forever was a really, really, really good game. I gave it, I think, I remember from, excuse me. I gave it 4 out of 5 in my review for GamePen. I didn't like No One Lives Forever 2, though. A lot of people did. I didn't. Did you ever play No One Lives?
I have not. I'm completely unfamiliar with this franchise.
Oh, my God. So, picture, now, the game was supposed to be a spy like James Bond, right? Played straight. But somewhere along the line,
as opposed to played for camp.
Well, no, MGM threatened to sue them because it was too close to James Bond. So what they did was they turned James Bond into a girl, and they made it campy, 60s campy.
Oh, nice.
And the thing about it is that the character is a very strong female character who's dealing with a time in which, you know, they were sort of looked down on, and she has to. And the one character who thinks she can perform is her mentor, who is basically the Sean Connery version of James Bond, except like 30 years older. And, you know, there's a lot of humor in it. I mean, just a lot of humor. Some of it laugh out loud. And, you know, and like I said, it was a strong female character who wasn't pandered to, who wasn't sexualized too much. I mean, she was stylish. She wore a lot of fabulous 60s clothes, like you remember the outfit that Jackie O used to wear? One of her outfits is like that.
Oh, the pink one with the pillbox hat?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Like the really, that's really the famous Chanel suit?
It's the same thing. You know, that pink overcoat, sort of like a dress overcoat. You know, that's...
Yeah, the famous one with the Chanel suit.
Yeah, she has one of those. Her weapons are feminine, too. I mean, she has lipstick that explodes, you know, fashionable sunglasses that are X-ray glasses, that sort of thing, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, but those are... you know, James Bond had those X-ray sunglasses, too, at one point.
I'm just saying, I think you would have been a huge fan if you'd played it. It's really, really good. So, anyway... It's a shame that, you know, I mean, I have No One Lives Forever somewhere around here. It's one of those keep circulating the tape sort of thing, you know, and it still works on it works on XP. I know that. So if you ever find an old copy, you might want to try it.
I might look it up.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, if I remember, which I probably won't.
I love the music. I mean, you have to play it. It is a love letter to the old spy films, and also very campy, very funny, and also played seriously as well. You know, so like, you know, I can't say enough about it. It's a pity that there's not going to be a remake of it in the near future. I just don't understand why Warner would be so. No, you can't make it, and no, we're not going to help you make it. And even if it's all your money, we're not going to help you. I don't understand that attitude.
See, I really do think that license holders, is, you know, especially for, let's take Disney for an example, and on all these, you know, cartoon IPs that they've got, like DuckTales. I mean, it cost them nothing to let a small indie studio revamp the art on this old game, especially since Disney just kind of sat back and collected a licensing fee. So why Warner Brothers wouldn't do that when it comes to No One Lives Forever is kind of baffling.
You know, sometimes they do it just because they can, I think. Or if they don't think they'll have 100% control, I don't know. I mean,
it's just a little messed up,
what's
frankly.
What's the worry there? That they're going to damage the property they don't care about?
You know what? Like, don't sit on the intellectual property. Let people use it. Collect your fee. This way, A, your fan bases are continuing to give you money for these IPs that you own. And B, you're creating jobs, frankly.
Okay. Let me give you a perfect example of something. Now, the Star Wars license, George Lucas, you know, was protective of it, but he allowed people to make tons of fan films, tons of their own property, you know, all these things that are based on his property. And he never shoved a note in their faces and told them to stop because it's his, you know. He encouraged it. As a matter of fact, on the Star Wars site, they had sites where you can download clips and all that stuff. You know, he encouraged it because he knew that was a way to grow the brand. If people are emotionally attached to your product, it's going to grow even if you're not making money on what they're creating.
Right. Like the James Vanderbeek Power Rangers thing that happened this week.
Oh, yeah, the right. So bloody, bloody, blood, right. Bloody guts.
So for anybody who is not on Facebook or, you know, just had their head in the sand this week, James Vanderbeek starred in a fan-made, hyper-gritty Power Rangers kind of fan movie.
Basically,
It's about 15 minutes long.
Basically, Starship Troopers meets Power Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, it was all, you know, the whole point was like, why would you weaponize children and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, hey, that's great.
Well, joke there.
Power Rangers is still, you know, it's an active IP. They've got, like, Power Rangers, like, quasi-samurai or whatever the next one is coming. Like, there's another one coming out 25 years after, you know, the original characters. And there's now actually, you know, they were sent, you know, YouTube was sent a cease and desist letter to pull down this awesome video. I didn't particularly care for it, but, you know, good for them that they made it. You know, and it's now we're taking a look at in the same way that George Lucas was like, no, go ahead, you know, worship, you know, go ahead and show your appreciation for my characters as long as you make it clear this isn't canon. You know, and it really is kind of like the net neutrality, but like in entertainment terms. And, you know, let's face it, coming up with IPs has not really been, you know, it kind of started around television time. You know, we're in like, I would say like the first or second grandfatherly generation of, you know, understanding what happens to IPs. I mean, like, for example, like Mickey Mouse, for example, when copyright laws were written around when Mickey was created, they were done a certain way because nobody had ever used an intellectual property in the way that Mickey Mouse has been used as, you know, the figurehead for an entire multinational corporation.
Well, remember, Mickey was made because Disney was blocked from using Oswald, right?
Right, but we're talking about more long term. So we're only just now understanding, you know, like, hey, Ozzie and Harriet were one of the first intellectual properties, you know, or Lucille Ball, right? Who's going to, you know, that's a little different because it revolves, you know, something that was completely held by, you know, Lucy herself, you know, and Desi.
Well, that's why they call it Desi Lou.
Right. But I'm just saying as a private two person owned entity. But now when you start talking about like what happens to these characters and who owns them 50 years later or 100 years later, you know, because we're only like what, maybe entering the second century of television, the second century of film.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, so even these old technologies are still changing the way, you know, the longer they go on, are still changing the way that we have to think about our legal system.
Yeah. So we're going to move on to the next item, which is sort of melancholy. Go ahead, Paul.
Star Trek Online players pay their respects to Leonard Nimoy, and this comes from us from Eurogamer. Last night, Star Trek Online players gathered to pay their respects to Leonard Nimoy, a Star Trek actor who died recently at the age of 83.
It was yesterday.
Yesterday. Oh, was it yesterday?
Yes.
Time loses all meaning when you're hunting werewolves. Nimoy, who played Spock on the Star Trek TV show and films, took part in a presentation of Star Trek Online at the end of 2008. Las Vegas Star Trek convention alongside then Cryptic Studios producer Jack Emmerich. You can see that we'll have a link to the video in the notes. Yesterday, an image showing Star Trek Online players paying their respects quickly shot up to the top of the front page of Reddit. One user, Arnicle999, said around 1,000 players traveled to the 5-year-old MMO's version of Vulcan following yesterday's news. The game then split those players up into different instances of between 15 and 20 characters. By the time I logged on, there were around 20 full instances and several partial, Article 99 said in his post on Reddit. While yesterday's gathering was spontaneous, Cryptic plans to add an official standing in-game memorial to Nimoy this Thursday, March 5th.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that people, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that Leonard Nimoy did that wasn't Star Trek. The one that I remember most is Never Forget, which he played a Auschwitz survivor who fought who had to deal with Holocaust deniers, right? And that was a very passion project for Leonard Nimoy, who was very into his Jewish nature. So how do you, what's it called? Do you have any memories of Leonard Nimoy that are special for you?
I've got to be honest, of all of the incarnations of Star Trek, the original never really made it onto my radar. So I don't have any particular fondness for Leonard Nimoy or the character that he portrayed personally. But just because I don't live in a cave, I can see the tremendous impact that this man and his acting portrayals of this very popular character have had on our society at large. I mean,
most of the videos have been the funeral scene from Star Trek II, you know, the Amazing Grace and then firing the torpedo. I posted the video of him singing the ballad of Bilbo Baggins, because he did do an album.
Well, okay, good for him.
Yeah,
I mean, clearly a talented and impactful man, and just on that level, I'm kind of sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
I'm not sad personally. But I'm sad because you all are sad.
Well, here's the thing. You know, someone has an impact when the front page of every single tabloid, not major papers like the New York Times or stuff like that, but every single tabloid had Leonard Nimoy on their front page today. So when someone has that sort of impact, you know, in which their death actually, you know, gets on the front page of every single tabloid in the U.S., that's saying something. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. And you, Hillary, tag teamed against me all episode, especially over final.
You mean we both rock with intelligent and informed opinions?
And I said,
oh, wait, I'm sorry. You see that as going against you. Never mind.
And the thing is, I said, I said that you, I mentioned, you know, in a post that you thought I was a bad person because I was not particularly, you know, into Final Fantasy. And
you said I had no soul.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to quote me, do it correctly.
Anyways, Alvishard writes in, welcome back, guys. Another good show. I'm sorry I can never manage to send hate mail for Paul because I'm just too busy sending it to Jonah.
Aww.
Just kidding. This is more nerd rage mail because of the topic of Final Fantasy from the previous episode. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready to suspect that Alpha Shard has no soul either.
No, just the opposite. Well, saying that I have no soul? Well, saying you're not into Final Fantasy because you've only played 10 and up is like saying you don't like Star Wars because you've only seen the prequels. I'm sorry, but as far as I'm concerned, you've only played the bad Final Fantasy games. The golden era of Final Fantasy was parts 4, 5, and 6, 6 being my personal favorite. It has the best story, art, and music of the entire series. Wait, what happened to 7? Oh, never mind.
7, 8, 9.
Okay, so the thing about Final Fantasy was the first one was supposed to be the last. And last and only, but it had done so well they decided to continue. So the only thing final about them was that you only saw that one world per game. You never went back there, so there wasn't truly a sequel in the sense of a continuing world. That changed after Final Fantasy X. Now even Final Fantasy IV and VII have sequels. Final Fantasy VI was the last to have that second that 2D art style that I still love. Final Fantasy VII had a real mixed bag of art, from beautiful backgrounds to horrendous 3D models. Final Fantasy VIII had a terribly convoluted story and felt too modern. Final Fantasy IX, I think, was the last one that I really enjoyed, but still missed and preferred the 2D art style over the still awkward 3D models. Final Fantasy X had unrelatable characters, and it looked pretty but felt so shallow. Final Fantasy XI was the first MMO, which I never played. Wow. That's a slap. Final Fantasy XII was too easy to cheese... What? Final Fantasy was too easy to cheese with grinding out the chessboard skills. I don't get...
He's saying that in many Final Fantasy games, there comes a point where it's like, if you just run around this one particular area fighting monsters, you'll basically max out all of your characters, and then all of the customizing that you did is meaningless because every character becomes just like every other character. Mm.
Just about everything is wrong with Final Fantasy XIII. I know that Bird and the Dude's hair was weird, but they did that in Sudoku V as well. Maybe it's a cultural thing. I couldn't stand the dude with the beanie who constantly had a lock of hair in his face. Was that Storm? No. I'm not good with the names, because they all have names of emotions and rain things, like rain, storm, lightning.
Cloud.
What was truly obnoxious was the star rating they would give after each battle. After the first few, I realized they were going to be doing this the entire damn game. I couldn't go on after that. The game just insulted my intelligence way too much. It was a great run, but I think I've had my Final Fantasy with that series. Well, you know, there's Final Fantasy 15 coming out. It'll be interesting to see if they learned from the mistakes that they've been doing recently. I mean, they had 3 Final Fantasy 13 games, so.
I mean, I would want them to go back to, I don't know, making a good game.
Let me ask you a question, Paul. How would you know if Final Fantasy 15 was good or not? What would the indicator be for you?
Let's see. It would start with intuitive gameplay mechanics. Oh no, it would start with being, is this fun? Let's take a look at the things that make past Final Fantasies not fun. Aimlessness, being unable to navigate around a city, corridors in which there are no choice, and repetitive battles. I mean, I'm not really sure how far you're going to get away from the repetitive battles.
Here's the thing. You know, it is possible to make battles not repetitive. I mean, XCOM proved that.
Right, and you know? Then you know what? Even in their own franchise, they proved that, because, I mean, when you drop 100 hours on... You know, Final Fantasy X, for example, you know, you're using the same combat system for 100 hours, but the final battles are, you know, even like the mid battles are still interesting because they change. Yeah. You know?
You know what?
You're not always fighting the same Panther with the same AI.
You know, there are some games, I forgot which ones. Oh, yeah, like Heroes of Might and Magic, when you were way better than the other team, it would actually tell you, do you just want to skip through this, you know, and just pretend we did the battle? You know, because it's just going to be boring having to fight this thing, you know, where they offer you the ability to just quick battle, you know, stuff that you knew that wasn't going to be very interesting. You know, that I'd like to see in more games, in which, you know, we know this battle, particular battle, is not going to be all that interesting. So you just want to skip it, you know, that sort of thing, you know, or just auto do it so that you get the XP, but you don't have to deal with the monotony, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it also kind of puts you on point of, like, you know, if you're stuck somewhere because you raced through your current part, you can go back to the previous part and get caught up on the battles that you should have done so that you can, you know, be at the level you're supposed to be for that particular end boss.
I just want to see you rave about a new Final Fantasy game. I just want to...
Well, let them put out a rave-worthy one.
I want to see you gush about Final Fantasy. Anyways, at Kickstarter... It is true. You have to be careful with investing, but I wouldn't say 9-10 video game Kickstarters have failed. You guys keep seeming to forget the mentions, the ones that have succeeded. FTL, Divinity, Original Sin, Shadowgate, Shadowrun, Pillars of Eternity, Wasteland 2. Well, here's the thing. I backed a lot of those games. I backed FTL, and I have FTL. I backed Shadowrun. It's okay. I backed Wasteland 2. You know, it's just too hard. You know?
Yeah, but that's kind of like saying that, like, oh, you guys keep forgetting to say, you know, Tom Cruise or Nicole Kidman.
And Pillars of Eternity hasn't come out yet.
For saying that, like, it's, you know, oh, people make successes in acting all the time. Well, look at Oprah Winfrey. And it's like, well, yeah, if you're gonna tout out, feel free to go ahead and tout out the one or two that actually, like,
right,
hold to their commitment. But I will still hold to the fact that the majority do not.
Yeah, Pillars of Eternity has not come out yet, but I'm hoping it's great because a friend of the show, Chris Avalon, is developing it with Obsidian, so we're crossing our fingers about that one. Especially, it's also the highest, until recently, Kickstarter that I backed. I backed it for $140 because, you know, I liked it. I like the concept, and I like Chris Avalon. I will concede that one has to be careful in choosing products or keep in mind that the project may fail and you will not get nothing. Kickstarter does have on its site that there are no guarantees of products being completed. I like what Hillary said about trying to help these developers out and giving them a chance, and I do think Paul is also right when he says there are those shady individuals that make crowdfunding look bad. The thing is that, you know, it isn't that they're not going to be done, but you can't expect it to be great. You know, sometimes they make it, they work hard, and it just sucks, you know? And not every game is going to be good, you know? And the thing is that, you know, it's sort of like pre-ordering a really bad game. You know, you pre-ordered it, but it turned out to be sucks, and you're stuck with it. You know, there's no way to, you know, wait for reviews for something that you're backing, because you're basically pre-ordering it.
Yeah, I've got nothing.
Yeah. Okay.
I stay away from Kickstarter and all crowdfunding stuff.
At Greg Zeshuk, it's a shame that the title made me think he might work on Baldur's Gate or something. The idea sounds well-meaning, but I agree with Jonah. I just remember using my imagination to fight strange aliens or playing spies or whatever. Paul, did you say that you were a big fan of the Baldur's Gate games? I'm trying to remember.
No, that was, I had friends that are friends.
No, that was Jordan, who wasn't really into Baldur's Gate then.
Yeah.
Anyway, the question of this week, and it was supposed to be last week when Hillary was on, was what is your favorite computer or video game adaptation of a board game? So, Paul, do you have a favorite board game, computer game that you like?
Let me think about this one for a second.
And I'm going to say right now, Mario Party does not count.
I don't know. It's like, how many different versions of Wheel of Fortune have there been on, you know, on computer entertainment? Let's see.
I'll go first. I've been I've been playing.
Blockus or Skip-Bo?
Skip-Boo?
Skip-Boo. Oh, yeah. Never. Or Blockus. I mean, I enjoy Blockus on my iPhone. It's made by Mattel. It's kind of cool.
I really loved Lords of Waterdeep on the iPad. It's like playing the board game. And it's AD&D, but basically it's worker placement, you know, and you get little colored blocks that you have to get to fulfill quests, you know, and it's really rewarding. If you have an iPad, Paul, I strongly suggest you try Lords of Waterdeep. It's really, really fun.
So, the time suck.
Paul, you were breaking up there, so can you say that again?
Is it going to be another time suck? Because I don't know how much more time in a day I have to give.
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's one of those games in which you can play a single game in like 30 minutes if you play really fast, if you know what each space does.
Dude, do you know what I can do with 30 minutes?
Yeah, but it's fun. Also, you can stop at any time and come back to it. I mean, I guess are you still being time sucked by Dungeon Keeper?
No.
You giving up?
Well, not that I've given up. I'll check in like once a week at this point.
Oh, okay. So from a free-to-play game that's basically having given up and you're just straggling along just to make sure, you know, just because you feel obligated to keep up with it.
Yeah, I mean, I put so much time into it already.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. How big is your dungeon now then?
The dungeon is always maximum. Like, there's only one size that your dungeon can be.
How complex is your dungeon then?
It's only as complex as it's ever been.
Yeah. So look for our show notes.
I mean, it's not like Heyday where, you know, there's, you know, new screens to unlock. There's just no.
That's your big thing right now, isn't it, Heyday?
Yeah, somebody got me sucked back into it, and I kind of...
That was you.
No, somebody got me sucked back into it.
No, you said that someone asked you about a game that they should try, and you said, "Well, Heyday," and then that got...
Right, and I jumped in to help them out for an hour.
And then you said, "Oh, you know what? I want to play this again."
Because, like, I just kind of kept giving them all of my stuff so that they could advance a little bit more quickly. And then it was just like, oh, crap, I'm back in it.
You're back.
I've been playing it this entire recording, so.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You can share your feedback. So leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. I'll set us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to @fans@GamingPodcast.net, or you can just visit GamingPodcast.net and post comments on our episodes, you know. And I know there's a crap ton of people listening to this podcast now. I just wish they would just start writing comments.
Yeah, guys, I mean, here's the thing. I'm really starting to feel unappreciated, so if you don't write in, I'm going to do something else with my time.
And subscribe to us in iTunes and leave some iTunes comments, too. So, because we want to be famous. And
ooh, or nerd famous, which is even better.
Nerd famous. We want to have nerdcore. So, anyways, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.
Oh.
It is.
Yeah, I know. I'm just like my brain is melting. Just one of those weeks. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention. Next week I'll be at PAX East, so there's probably not going to be a podcast next week.
Oh, you're not going to GDC?
No, I'm not. I'm going to PAX East, not GDC. GDC is all the way in San Francisco. I wish I could go because a lot of people that I want to hang out with are going to be there. But instead, I'm going to deal with PAX East and play board games all weekend.
Yeah, I... I'm not going to GDC either.
Oh, why not?
I don't have the finances.
Oh, well, wasn't it like $150 just to get... Wait, when you go to GDC, what is it that you really want to do?
Everything. And get a job.
Well, wouldn't it be an investment for you? I mean, you know, you don't even have to be...
Yes, except that I'd need to be able to eat.
No, I mean, you go to the parties that are around GDC, though.
No, I mean, I could spend that $2,000 or more that it would take to get me, you know, to get me there and running for the three or four days, or I could pay my rent. Like, we've kind of hit that point. People are saving soda cans for me.
You know what? One of these days, I'm just going to pay for your ticket and drag you there so that you can get a real job.
I mean, I'm pissed because I missed it last year because I was in the same position. Like, this position has lasted a year, and this is what's pissing me off this week. And the year before that, I didn't go because I was I too busy?
You might have been working at the time. I mean, Disney Interactive?
Yeah, I was, exactly. I just lost the Disney job.
You just lost it or just got, you just lost it?
Well, they told me that they were going to be laying me off.
Okay. I see.
But, like, I was,
yeah.
Whatever. Well, hindsight being 2020.
This is the business that we've decided to be in as fiction.
I know, right? I tell people this all the time. You don't go into making video games because you want a stable life.
But your life does belong in a stable. That's just something I had to say. And I didn't even know if it made sense.
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Wah, wah.
Anyways, for those of you still listening to the podcast long after it was over, we will see you next week.
Don't you have anything else to do? I mean, come on. I did my shtick about the Bonds.
Anyways, we'll see you in probably 2 weeks.
All right, later.